Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And it's already past halfway through the month.
Yeah, I mean, just keeps on going. Nothing's stopping it. Nothing gets in its way. It's like
Father Time marches on. Time marches on.
Yep. We have a lot to talk about. Some fun things happened over the week. This week is going to be a holiday shortened week due to the President's Day holiday on Monday. You want to do a quick Austin update or a market update first? Where do you want to go?
Well, you might as well mention Austin.
I was in Austin.
Yeah.
I was in Austin.
You're supposed to screw up Adam so much he wouldn't be able to do the No Agenda show, but it didn't work out that way. He was sober as a judge.
Let me tell you, you told me, I got bad intel. You told me, you can one drink, it's done, right?
Yeah, true.
No. I can tell you firsthand that is not the case. We're going to need a bit of a more significant effort the next time around. But this is my first time in
Texas.
Not in Texas, but my first time in Austin. And I was really amazed with all the food trucks. The barbecue was wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Austin is like Portland South.
Yeah, it was great. So we got there and flew in on Friday night and did some touring. Did the LBJ Library, which I know you'd love or you've seen.
Yeah, I've never been there.
Fantastic. Did all that, kind of a museum dedicated to LBJ and all the things that he's done. And very, very fascinating. And the library, which is in the back, it's this entire, I don't know, maybe 5 stories high with glass windows you can see through with all of the various bills and legislation and notes and everything he did during when he was in office. It was just stacked up in there.
Yeah, he was in office for a long time because he was a senator for a long time. And I think he was a congressman. He was public servant.
Yeah, pretty cool. So we met up with Adam and Tina, went to his apartment in downtown Austin and started off with a couple of bottles of champagne or the beginnings of the evening. And he was a wonderful host. Then we took a walk down to this great restaurant and we caught a variety. There's this waiter walking around with this big glass dome on top of something with all the smoke inside of it. I'm like, well, what's that? Well, those are smoky Manhattans. I'm like, oh, okay. Because the night before I went and I had a bunch of Manhattans at Lambert's, a great place for barbecue. And so we're like, all right, we'll have those. So we sat down and they brought a round of those smoky Manhattans out. And then we had some great dinner, some wonderful wild game and elk foie gras sliders. And I had a Wagyu skirt steak and it was some great fish and we had some other lobster and something. Then another round of drinks and then another round of drinks and it kept on coming. Then we decided
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
What's in an elk foie gras slider?
I suppose, I guess it's elk liver, I suppose.
Well, that's what foie gras specifically refers to birds.
Maybe it was elk and foie gras. It was delicious.
It probably was elk and foie gras. That would be my guess.
Yeah, maybe it was that. Maybe it was like shredded elk.
The elk liver is like on the list of high-end gourmet stuff.
Yeah, I've never heard of it before, but I just saw the menu. Like, all right, we'll go with that. We had boar ribs, and what else was
boar
there?
Ribs.
It was great. It was
boar ribs should have been good.
It was good. It was really good. And then after a few of these, we stumbled out and decided that we were going to go for drinks down at the Russian House, which was this, it was right across the street from my hotel. So we walked in that morning and checked it out. And I'm like, this is cool. There's a whole wall of infused vodkas in these bottles, maybe 100 different flavors.
Yeah.
So we went there and they had kind of this big old bear in the front and they had this garb that you could put on, these Russian outfits. So we took some pictures with those Russian outfits on, the hats, and decided we're going to get some of these shots of vodka. So I looked around, I saw some people drinking. So I said, what are you having? How's that? They said, oh, it's the best thing here. It was a weird name. I'm like, all right, I'll have that. So my thought on the wonderful vodka was it tasted like the vodka infused with Play-Doh. Mm. That's the only thing I could bring to my thoughts of what it tasted like.
Maybe that's what it was.
Maybe that's what it was. That's why I didn't know what the name was. Maybe it was the Russian word for Play-Doh. And we had some other few shots. Then we went back and to the apartment, walked back there, had some more champagne, and a lovely evening. And I must say that you were front and center about how much we love you. Seriously. What a great guy you are. Not kidding.
You guys drank too much.
That was at the end of the evening, clearly.
Right, yeah.
But we have to thank, we had some donations come in because it was a group effort here trying to get him drunk. We called the libation donations.
Didn't work.
What's that?
Although pictures of Adam, people kept responding to saying he looked plastered.
I got one picture with his eyes rolled up in his head, which I didn't push out.
Oh, I want to see it. I need it for the newsletter. Okay. Send it to me right after the show here. I'll put it in tomorrow's newsletter.
Okay. But I like how I send you a picture of me and Adam in the Cludio. Right? And what's your response?
My response was, yay, you finally got into the Cludio.
I don't think that was the response.
Oh.
You don't remember the response?
Well, that was a typo.
Yeah. Oh, it wasn't yay. Let's just put it that way. But it was nice. I saw his whole rig and all that, trying to understand how he does the things that he does and puts together the show, and kind of he's helped me put together my rig, but his is all software based and I got all this hardware stuff sitting around. So
yeah, yeah, he loves the software.
Yep. So that was really, really cool. So let me just give some thanks to the donors. We had a pretty significant fund, which was good because the prices are not cheap for liquor in Austin. We had Dame Tanya. We have Michael Auslander, Jerry Rocklester, Ben Gross, Corey B, Sir Mark, the old hip guy, and a lot of people wanted to be anonymous, I guess, just in case something bad happened.
Yes, they didn't want to be liable.
Yeah, so we have several different. Thank you to all the anonymous donors that sent in money as well. There's a lot of them, actually. Kind of interesting. Then I went over to San Antonio. That was a pretty good trip. I enjoyed that. They have the river there and the river walk and had some really nice times there. I did something for you on the way there. I was thinking of you. Yes, I did. We had choices of what cars to rent for my trip from Austin to San Antonio. And what was interesting was, let me just give you the first part of the story. We got this car really cheap, $28 for the day.
Sounds good.
The ride from my hotel to the rental car agency, which is probably about 2.5 miles, due to the fact that the Austin Marathon was running that day and how every road in the city was closed off, cost me $25 for my Uber.
Wow.
We just walked. Kept running in circles. But I had choice of a car and they said, which one would you like? I said, I'll take that Ford Fusion. Dvorak has said he loved that car, the best hybrid of them all. I'll take that Ford Fusion. Isn't that the one you like?
I like the Ford Fusion, yeah. It's not my. I mean, I think the car, if I was, yeah. I like the Ford Fusion. I tested it. It's a good car.
42 miles per gallon on average. I went, 250 miles. I put in four gallons in the
air. Yeah, you don't put it. It doesn't use a lot of. It
doesn't use anything. Yes,
it's got a lot of pep.
Yeah, it was fine. It was great. So it was a great trip. Overall, it was a great trip and really enjoyed the time there. We'll do it again. So he and I debated whether or not we would make a central point of meeting in Austin for the three of us. And I said, yeah, Dvorak would love to do that. He wasn't so sure.
Well, we haven't had, it's awkward when the two of us are together in a public situation because I don't know if it improves donations as opposed to two separate meetups.
Aha. Uh-huh. So
I always think of it as like kind of wasting one of ours, either my time or his time.
So we can't just do it as a nice thing to get together.
No. Okay. It has to be a meetup. Has to be public.
Has to be public. Nice has to be public to be and has to be about together. Money.
What? I gave up on that idea years ago.
All right. So if it's about money, we'll figure a place that we can we could mine the most money out of. Is that the point?
Well, not mine isn't the right word. It's just hope for the best.
Ah, I gotcha. All right, moving along here. I think we're moving along. Market update. So we had a great week, one of the best weeks in years in the stock market. After 2 weeks of major declines, markets across the board were up about 4%. U.S. dollar resumed its decline again. And the big question is whether or not this bounce that we saw is really a dead cap bounce, or is it something that is sustainable? So was the error on the part of the sellers over those 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and whether or not the error was on the buyers last week? That's the question.
Yes, this is the moment of truth coming up.
Yeah, I think I mentioned that in the past. I looked historically at times when markets drop like this over a 2 week period where there was some big drawdowns, you know, 5 or 6% a couple of times over 2 weeks. And it seemed that each time the next week that followed was a very bold buying opportunity and stocks were up pretty well. And then the following week, which will be this week, by the way, stocks rolled over and they start to go towards a retest of the bottom of the range lows. So we got one day so far that confirms that thesis.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of buying into that idea.
Yeah, so and markets are trading kind of thin. You could see it moving very quickly up and down. Easy to push the basket. We had the markets closed on Monday. The VIX is still elevated above 20. But what happened today is the market went from red in the morning, kind of swelled all the way up. The NASDAQ was up like 1% midday. Back to the red by the end of the day, kind of rolled all the way back down. The NASDAQ closed a little bit higher. The S&P lagged and the Dow Jones was down hard because of Walmart sold off. Worst day for Walmart since 1988.
And what does everyone attribute that to?
Their earnings announcement this morning.
Well, I know, but I mean, why is their earnings, what's behind the curtain?
So I guess the earnings were okay, but their projections and their outlook was not. They really said that their earnings came in okay, but they were complaining about their softer than expected holiday sales and their outlook moving forward was going to be significantly lower.
And I think the whole thing is going to eventually boil down to their attempt to compete with Amazon, giving away free shipping and those blue boxes.
But are they going to do an Amazon where Amazon was you know, really sucking down money and really had problems with earnings for a long time, but then all of a sudden they stopped on their build outs and voila, the stock jumped.
It's a possibility, but I don't know if they can, you know, that takes a lot of nerve to take that approach. I mean, Bezos got lucky with Amazon because everyone kind of was rooting for him, I think. And so he could go that far. And I think Walmart, since they have a different overall business model, we'll get pounded, hammered.
Right. I mean, and yeah, not going to give the benefit of the doubt because it was a proven property to begin with. And now all of a sudden, if it's hitting the skids, everybody wonders. Now, of course, there's a silver lining to this that has been pushed across the interwebs. And that was that, well, Walmart sales being down, what that really tells us is that a lot of people are stepping up. They're really feeling good and they're buying more expensive things from different stores, not the low priced discount stores. So it's a really a good thing if you think about this.
That's a very interesting theory. only stock market analysts can come up with that one.
Yeah. So
and take it seriously.
No, very seriously.
If it was in any other business, we'd call it conspiracy theory.
Right. And laughed off.
Yeah.
Yep. So the S&P 500 closing up just below the 50-day moving average. Dow closes below 25,000. And again, this big correlation, I believe, between the euro and the U.S. dollar, and particularly the U.S. dollar, is kicking in pretty hard. The yen is getting moving down significantly. The euro is moving back up. The dollar is moving back up. And as you remember, the thing that I've been watching is all about this relationship with the U.S. dollar and with regard to stocks. That's really what I think kicked it off. The 2 weeks ago was this whole move in the dollar and the yields that moved up. Hmm. You start to see things like gold get cropped. Let's see, gold dropped 1.8 8.6% today. Silver dropped 1.6. Copper dropped 1.85%. Again, because of the rising dollar. And then we have the bond yields, which are still being problematic. The two-year bond, two-year treasury, close to the highest since like 2008. And this is on the heels of, or in advance of, I should say, that this week we have $258 billion. $258 billion of bonds for sale this week through the Treasury.
Well, that's interesting.
It's one of the biggest offering weeks in history. Now, what I did is I put a two-year yield chart on here. Now, so here's where this all plays together. So we have a situation where we know there's a big deficit. We know that the deficit is rising due to tax cuts and some of the recent expenses that were put in with the recent bill to keep the government open for a while and spending bill, right? We know this. All this is going to go in and the deficit is going to rise. We know that.
Yeah.
At the same time, the bond yields are rising in a time when the government has to issue $258 billion worth of bonds. Look at the two-year yield chart that I put up there.
Hang on.
You see that?
Yeah.
So this is on dhunplugged.com. You can see the show notes, episode number 396.
It's a little roller coaster car going up that.
Yeah, exactly. So what this is showing is that since September, the two-year treasury bill went from about 1.3% up to about 2.3%. About a 1% increase, which is like 80% increase in rates since that time. Now, this is when, again, a 1% increase in bond yields, which the government will have to pay on $258 billion more of issued bonds, is going to cost a lot more money to service. So what is that?
Yeah.
It's $250 billion. It's 1% more of $250 billion is 10% would be 25. So it's $2 billion more of just on the 2 years. This is not only 2 years. They're also actually, but let's assume all of them moved up 1%, all the bonds across the board. So we're talking about $2 billion more of servicing costs on the bonds they're about to issue this week. That will be added to the deficit.
Right.
You know? So
yes, this is a very nice chart. People should definitely go look this chart up and take a look and say, huh.
Yeah,
how's this bond crash?
How's this? Exactly. So that's my question. Is this the start of the next leg of a bond collapse? This is your thing.
Yeah, it's totally my thing. And this chart is just unless this thing somehow levels off, which I doubt. If you look at this chart, it's apparent that something's wrong.
Yep.
Because it's just an abnormal chart. It's like things bouncing around for months and months and months and months. And then it just decides to stop bouncing so much and form a pretty much of a straight line up. Except for this last moment that we're witnessing now where it went down and did a little dipsy-doo at the end, which may have to do with the recent market collapse. And it's maybe trying to get its footing.
Yeah. And again, this is what people are really nervous about. And then we have the Fed minutes out tomorrow, which are going to talk about the potential for how many rate hikes are going to be by the end of the year. And now a lot of companies and analysts and economists are pricing in 4 rate hikes throughout 2018 rather than 3. Unless something really bad happens and the Fed backs off for some reason. But that's going to create tighter financial conditions, higher borrowing costs, more cost to service debt for companies and for the government. Probably higher deficits, slow down the economy, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's a lot of things.
Or heat it up.
How was it going to heat it up?
Well, you'd get this situation where we start getting inflation and people start panic buying. No one's been buying anything.
Right. And that ends up feeding on itself, right? Just like a deflationary environment, nobody's buying because they're like, I'll wait.
It'll be cheaper tomorrow. Why should I buy today? Yeah.
What happens here is an inflation environment. And when you get runaway inflation, when everybody starts going crazy and they got to get all the milk off the shelves because God forbid the price is going to go up tomorow. People, you know.
Yeah, well, we haven't. I mean, I suppose in the late 70s, we had a little bit of that. I mean, it's nothing like Brazil.
Right. Or Venezuela. You
know, or Venezuela or, you know, any of these places. Argentina's gone through hyperinflation, too. European countries and Western, Northern Hemisphere countries have, it's been very rare. It happened in Germany, and that's about it.
So what?
And that was after a horrible World War One where they took it in the shorts.
So when was that? We had heavy inflation, not runaway necessarily, but heavy inflation back in the 80s.
Well, it was really mostly in the late 70s where it was really bad.
Right, late 70s into just...
It did drag into the 80s, but it wasn't anything like it was from like 77 to 1980. That last 3 or 4 years of the Carter administration, of the whole Carter administration, pretty much it was unbelievable. I mean, to get a mortgage, it was 20%. It wasn't unusual.
And people were like, okay, I'll do it. But that obviously makes housing prices adjust lower. You know, just like housing prices adjust lower for higher inflation, this is something that I think people need to look at. So when you have a house that you have, let's say at $100,000, and the person that could afford that at a 4% interest rate is a different person that could afford that at 20% interest rate, right? I mean, you can't afford that. So what do you buy? Well, maybe I'll buy a $75,000 house. That makes sense?
Yeah.
But the problem is that houses now, maybe there aren't any $75,000 homes because you have this inflation process going on. But what happens is that housing prices will then adjust. That $100,000 price that was affordable for the person at 4% now becomes a $75,000 house.
That never happens.
What housing prices don't go down?
I've got tons of documents. That's what happens is that people divide the houses into two. They put up tiny homes. They build cottages. And San Francisco just passed a law like a week ago. That was just, or they're pushing a law that hasn't been, I don't think it's gone through yet, that now it's going to allow for denser apartment arrangements. So you can take and subdivide a house internally to about six apartments when it would have been illegal to have more than two in the past. And that's the direction things go. And I've seen, in fact, there's evidence of that taking place during the Great Depression when these a number of giant Victorian houses all throughout Berkeley, and I ran into these places when I was a student in the 60s, you go in there, there are actually eight apartments instead of some single family dwelling.
But you don't think that housing price will back up if interest rates move higher?
No.
I disagree.
Well, no, if you by back up, you mean drop 10%?
I don't know about 10%, but they're not going to keep on inflating. There'll be a cost factor.
No, well, it's already, they're overpriced. But right now, the average house in San Francisco is $1.8 million.
That's it?
And those, we're talking about dumps.
Right.
One bedroom, two bedroom fixer uppers that shouldn't be selling for more than 25 grand.
And they're still going.
Yeah.
Well,
So I disagree with this thesis.
But how do you afford a house if you're making a certain amount of money? You think that everything just goes up uniformly? Your salary goes up,
I think it has a lot to do with the area.
Oh, it could be. But interest rates, I mean, housing sales will slow. They have to slow.
And not to mention that'll happen for sure, of course.
Not to mention the fact that when you have interest rates that are going up and people have borrowed money to buy rental properties, and if they didn't lock in their rates and they're using floating rates, all of a sudden the rental properties become a problem and you have an oversaturated market with too many houses. So many houses have been bought as a second home to utilize because you could say, well, you know, rates are low, so I could buy this house and what I'll do is I'll get people to rent it from me. And now all of a sudden you have even more houses and they're not your own personal home. It's a secondary home. So there's a lot of excess in the market, I think.
Again, I think it's the area you're talking about.
Yeah, no, of course. It's clearly select by area. No question about that. But even some of the best areas, I mean, during the housing crisis back in 08, 09, I mean, you can't tell me that San Francisco prices didn't drop.
No, they dropped drastically. They dropped about 30%. But the market, generally speaking, is more... The market, the way, if you look at housing... look at the stock market charts and look at the housing price charts. They never match. They almost rarely match up. It's almost like they're two separate things going on their separate ways. It just so happened that this housing market collapse, which was based on fundamentally bad practices, triggered the stock market collapse.
Right. It was all involved in the banking and all that. That's why it was all the housing situation and the financial situation were all attached. That was the problem at the time.
And I think that was an anomaly.
I would tend to agree with that. We've had other financial crisis and housing prices didn't drop like that. I mean, I don't recall a time. I mean, housing prices do ebb and flow. I mean, there is that cycle like everything else. But I agree.
Yeah, but from my looking at it, it's about a 10% ebb and flow, yeah. Not 30.
But what happens when you have housing prices that are so overvalued at this point? Do you see a bigger drop potentially?
Logically, I should say yes, but I've watched the way it works in China and Hong Kong in particular. I mean, everything there is overvalued. It's ridiculous. We're at the point where a studio condo apartment, no bedrooms, is like millions of dollars. I really think it's a supply and demand situation within an area. That's why the prices out in the Bay Area are so outrageously high. Is because everybody wants to work in Silicon Valley, and so they jacked up the prices, jacked up through the roof. It's once Silicon Valley collapses, then it'll stop going up. But I don't think it's going to go down.
Okay, I got it. I'm with you. All right, let's move along because we're going to drain out our time frame on this. Bitcoin now above 11,000, or it was above 11,000 earlier today. South Korea and some other countries, as a matter of fact, seem to be backing off on their harsh regulation and the rhetoric they have about all this.
They're backing off because one of the head guys who was one of the regulators in South Korea is found murdered.
Whoops. Really? I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
The guy that was commenting about cryptocurrency?
I don't know if it was a guy commenting or not. I'm not sure exactly who it was, but it was one of the Bitcoin regulators.
Oh, gosh.
Murdered.
Oh. So now everybody's like, okay, maybe we'll change our tact here. That's unbelievable. But they were going to have a ban that they talked about in January. Now they're just doing some kind of a transparency issue with a know your customer.
Right.
So then we saw that Bank of England Governor Mark Carney, who, by the way, Mark, if you're out there, please make sure you have a full-time guard on this. He's saying that Bitcoin has failed as a currency measured by the traditional benchmarks and is neither a store of value nor useful way to buy things. I mean, this guy's got a target on his back, if that's what he's saying. Well,
I think he's right, don't you?
Yes.
It's not a useful way to buy anything. It's a nice roundabout way to buy illicit products over the internet.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I had dinner with a gentleman a couple of weeks back, and he was talking to me, and he says, hey, I got this Bitcoin business going. I'm like, oh, what are you doing? Well, we got these guys that want to buy these cars, these high-end cars, like, you know, like Lamborghinis and Aston Martins, and they want to buy Porsche. Okay, uh-huh. And when they want to buy it in Bitcoin, I'm like, oh, yeah, we're working in the middle to help them buy it with Bitcoin. I'm like, well, what do you do? Well, we get the Bitcoin and we convert it to dollars, and then we pay for the car in dollars. I said, what's so unique about that? I don't understand. And he says, yeah, it's going really well. I said, well, what are you doing? Well, we got some people because they want to be anonymous. You know, they want to. I'm like, yeah, but you turn their money into. So what happens? You become the party that then cashes the money.
Money laundering.
Yeah, exactly what that was. I mean, come on.
And by the way, they have to register these cars anyway. How anonymous can you stay?
I don't know. I mean, right. So what are you gonna do? Just stick it in a garage with no plates on it? I started going around in circles with this guy, and then I just said, you know what? I'm not talking about this anymore because this was the stupidest thing I've ever heard about. Then we had also the co-founder of Ethereum has put out, as the title goes, a stark warning for cryptocurrency fans. Don't bet the farm on crypto assets because prices could drop to near zero at any moment. That's from the founder, one of the co-founders of Ethereum. So I'm not sure what's going on with this whole market here with these cryptocurrencies. They did catch fire over the last several days. As a matter of fact, from the low, I think Bitcoin's up about 85 or 90% from the low a few weeks ago. So just that in itself is reason to believe this is not a currency.
It's
right.
It's never been a currency.
Right. Can you imagine? I'm going to buy my house in Bitcoin. As a matter of fact, I was in, when I was in Austin, we were walking around South Congress and all these food trucks there and all these really cool places, little fairs on every corner. So I walked through one of these little, you know, pop-up fairs, these like kind of weekend market things at a church. Yeah. And I go buy one of these hand creams and these natural fragrances and soaps. And right there in the front of the stand where he's at.
We take Bitcoin.
We take Bitcoin and easy to sign up. No transaction fee, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And I was
just trying to be cool.
Yeah, I guess so. Let's see. We talked about Walmart. Now, Home Depot came in good. We did probably expect that. Stock look is to be heading higher. We saw actually, I didn't put this on our list, but lumber futures were limit up today. And I think they closed at an all-time high. Lumber futures, which kind of makes sense with all that went on with the hurricanes and the fires and
Right. Good one.
And this is, remember we talked about how a lot of people were really concerned. They're like, oh, you know, my God, we have all these natural disasters, so terrible. And they are temporarily, but they're actually good for the economy longer term. As terrible as that sounds.
Yes. It sounds terrible, but it's true.
Yep. In Japan, more than half of Japan's companies do not plan to raise base pay and annual wages through incoming months, which is seen as a setback. You know, it's funny because all the things that they tried to do in Japan seem to not work. They want to raise they've been doing quantitative easing seems forever, probably 20 plus years. They've been trying to whack the yen for years and
yes,
years.
Yes, ever since that big crash, when was it, 97?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah. And then you have, what else they try to do? They tried to do the inflation.
They never got out of that crash.
Never. They have an aging population. They went negative interest rates. That's kind of backfiring on them.
Yeah.
They wanted to, you know, have all this money. They bought all these ETFs in their marketplace. And one of these days is really going to smack them in the face on that one. But just bad plans. And we keep on following the stuff that they do, which is kind of interesting. Kind of stupid. Albertsons, you know, Albertsons, right?
Oh, yeah.
They're buying the remaining chain of Rite Aid. I think, remember, I don't know, it was a year ago or so that.
Talking about this, Walgreens Boots.
Yeah, Walgreens came in.
Rite Aid.
They bought part of some of the stores, and I guess they got those. They're going to take over 1,932 stores and some other things, and they're just buying the rest. So I guess it's a counter to trying to make sure that Amazon doesn't take them out. You know, Albers, because Amazon's talking about getting in the pharmaceutical distribution business,
yes,
which would be
easy,
right? They're in Whole Foods. And by the way, somebody sent me something tonight on Whole Foods. Amazon is offering a 5% kickback. You know, through if you use their credit card at Whole Foods, you get 5%.
Hmm.
Instead of points. Well, that's your points. Same as money.
Somebody's got to bring back green stamps.
Oh, weren't those great?
there was three of them that I knew of. There was green stamps and there was blue something, blue chip.
It was blue something.
Yeah, it was blue something. And then the most obscure ones, and I think I still have some of these in my collection in the archives, which was the James Brown stamp.
Really? Really? Was there?
Yeah, it was for the black community. It was James Brown stamps. And it was just the same as the other systems, exactly the same. You could, you know, go bring your books and books and books of stamps into some little store and, you know, get a serving set or a bowl. And, James Brown. I think those are probably the real collectibles if you can find those.
I would ask you to dig through the archives of that closet in the back there that you always tell me you don't want to open and find some of these and take some pictures and throw them up on Twitter.
I think if you go on the internet, you can find James Brown stamps.
And what happened to your Twitter themes? You had the old cars for a while. You had, what happened to all those?
They burn out. I did the old cars for a while. Then I did, I had about three or four themes. I get kind of get into it. Right now, my theme, then I think it already blew up, which is what new song will replace the national anthem.
And what they did to Fergie is terrible.
That thing was horrible.
It was terrible, but it was her rendition of it. You know, I've heard other
It was a nightmarish rendition.
Really? I mean, I heard it.
You liked it? No. You heard it? You never heard it?
I heard it. I listened to the whole thing. I made myself listen to the whole thing. And I thought it was kind of a, I don't know, a swing version or something.
No, it was a swing into the mud version. It was terrible.
It was bad. But the thought of changing the song in... what's the point? So that people won't kneel? What?
No, it's some subversive thing. I'm not sure what the point is. But somebody came up with the one where if we're going to go for it, let's go with James Brown again. James Brown, Living in America. You can listen to that song. I've tweeted it out. And that would be the way to start a sporting event. I wouldn't mind, you know, because playing the national anthem before a sporting event's always galled me because it's not a military event. Why are we doing this? And it's also kind of a downer. And Living in America would get everybody worked up. It'd be great.
What about Lee Greenwood's, God Bless the USA, whatever it's called?
That would be in competition.
That'd be a good one, right?
Yeah, I think it would liven things up.
Probably better than We Are the World.
No, We Are the
World. Not good.
That might be the most honest one.
How about Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA?
No, that would be up there.
Yeah.
You've got better ideas than everybody on Twitter.
And I haven't even planned any of this. Let's just finish up this segment before we get to our Fed limericks. And by the way, you can follow John C. Dvorak on Twitter at TheRealDvorak. He'll be posting a variety of stamps from the years past, green stamps and blue stamps and brown stamps. And myself, Andrew Horowitz, one word on Twitter, which I share too much food pictures. I sent you some food pictures today in an email. Did you get those?
I got them. I haven't opened that email yet.
Oh, there was some good barbecue in there. Let's see. Okay, here's something which we kind of know about this, but it really, I think, was... I think this chart that's on this episode here on the show notes talks about the income boom that was there and very evident for people born between 66 and 80 has now turned over. We know the millennials are not theoretically making as much money in total as the next generation is not going to make as much. Now, let me just stop though and say, I know a lot of millennials, and some of them make some pretty good money at a young age.
Yeah, but most of them. And there are other millennial buddies who don't make anything, or they're working minimum wage, or they're barely getting by. I hate those millennials.
Okay.
There's a split in the millennials. There's two sorts of splits. One is an age split, younger and older millennials, and then there's an income split, which is across the board. Some millennials don't make any money at all, and they're in debt. They're miserable.
Well, here's an analysis that was done with 8 of the high-income countries. And the survey found that, and this one thing that bothers me already about this, it was done by the Resolution Foundation think tank. That already bothers me, the word think tank. You know, just somehow it just troubles me, the people sitting around thinking things.
I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, it's a think tank. They get paid to think. Found that millennials in their early 30s have household incomes 4% lower on average than members of the Gen X at the same age. So you got to follow this chart because at first I was like, what does this chart mean? But the black bars are, it's a comparison of income by country. And it looks at the black bar showing the Gen X compared to baby boomers. And Gen X clearly has a lot more income, better income, than the counterparts at the same age with baby boomers. And that was age 30 to 34. So at 30 to 34, when the Gen Xers were there, compared to baby boomers at 30 to 34. But look at the millennials compared to Gen X, especially in Spain, US, Germany. I mean, in Norway, UK, Finland, they're kind of, a little bit.
They still blow. It's terrible.
Yeah, they're better than the Gen X, but look at clearly, baby boomer. The Gen X was much better than baby boomers.
Let me look at this chart. The highest one here is Spain, and what it says to me is that Gen Xers were making 55% of baby boomers.
55%. I think it's 55% more. I think it's comparison of. So the Gen X made 55% more than baby boomers.
You sure it's not 55% of?
Well, how can you have a negative then?
No, it wouldn't be a negative.
Well, look at the millennials. Millennials are a negative 30.
How could you have a negative?
So let me just say how I look at this. My on Spain.
Well, I can tell you this much. I know a lot of millennials, or that would qualify as millennials in Spain, because I've been there enough times and we have a lot of we have fans.
Uh-huh.
None of it. There'd be rarely anybody working. One guy, you know, would be working, making pretty good money.
Right. Well, that one guy is making 30% less than his last generation. and the previous generation is making 55 or 60% more. So just to wrap this up, the way it looks to me at least is, and the way the article and the discussion went, was that millennials are earning generally less than Gen X.
Than anybody.
Yeah, that's true also. Yep, poor millennials. Oh, the poor millennials. All right, we have some Fed limericks that came in.
You have to remember that a lot of this has to do with the moment in time. This is at the same age, and the millennials are pretty much brought up, and you know, after the 2000.com stock crash, and then endured another one in 2008. The market has never been good for them.
Nope. That's why they like Bitcoin, because it only goes up.
Well, that'll screw them too. Anyway, okay, it's interesting. I'll look into this.
So we have some Fed limericks came in. We got two that were sent in. By the way, if you do want to send a Fed limerick, try not to send it to me on Twitter, because then I have to search for it and find it and figure it out.
Oh, yeah, it's no good. Yeah. Don't do it.
So send it over on to dhemail@gmail.com. That's a good one to get to us.
Now, I'm going to say something before you read any of them.
Yeah.
Structurally,
yeah,
Mike has got the best one.
Yes. Of all three, yes, I agree with that. I did a little differential. I did a dipsy doodle myself this week.
Yours is actually okay. It's acceptable. But Corey's, who you're going to read first, is completely out of control.
Yeah, you'd have to. It doesn't have the same cadence as
it can't. Look at the size of it. This is like he wrote War and Peace as a limerick.
Right. It's more of a poem.
Okay. Well,
but
yeah.
But the good news is you get to grade it. And so far on a scale of A to F, the average grade that Dvorak has given is about a C-ish.
Yeah, well, that would be average. Hello.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. That's a good point to make there. So this comes. The first one comes in from Corey Bennett. And, of course, in the chat room, you can feel free to grade this. And since it's a couple of seconds delayed, try to get it in quickly. We'll see how it compares with John's grading here. So Corey says, he writes in, hopefully I can get right through this right with the right rhythm. There is a man whose name ended in wits, but no one called him dim. From his bright insight, a show seemed just right, but a co-host was amiss. I missed that already, didn't I?
No, keep going.
Right. So he looked all about, inside and out, and from the left coast mudflats he came. Cranky and funny, probably makes a lot of money. Dvorak, the niche has been made.
What does made rhyme with?
I don't know.
Well, I like his, I mean, I think he makes it, you know, he's making a observation. And, but as a limerick, it's not really even close. I'd have to give him an F.
Oh.
Sorry. I mean, I think it was a nice try, but he could have tightened it up.
He sent in a $2,500 donation with that. Okay. All right.
Yeah, sure he did. Well, then he gets an A. Yeah, that's the way it works.
That's right. Okay. The next one's from me.
Yeah.
The reports are out. Oh, there were so many. Not a doubt at all that they were inflationary. No word from the Fed. Not a peep, not a shred. Could it be the bull is what they're intending to bury? Yeah, that's it.
It's a little bit stretchy, but I would give you a B. A B minus. B minus. Ugh.
Kind of a cliffhanger there on the minus part. The B minus.
A B minus.
I got A pluses and B pluses from the chat room on that one.
Yeah, they're
B plus. You know, they gave a because it was
they're me. Young. They're young.
Yeah, I got an ouch for Corey's.
Oh, Ouch. Perfect.
All right. This one comes in from Mike Scalora. And his goes, the Fed keeps inflation at bay. They're geniuses, some people say. The rates are so low, the markets must grow. I hope John gives me an A.
And indeed he gets an A. That was excellent.
That was the perfect amount of syllables.
Yeah, it was dynamite. Very well structured. It was tight. Got to the point. It's a little bit like those funny poems that I can't remember the name, what they're called, but it was good. Mm. It was structured perfectly.
I think he's the only one that ever got an A, I think.
No, I gave somebody else an A.
Yeah. So we'll have these on the show notes again and the different scores, grades, and all that. Just send us yours in. Of course, if you want to send it by mail, just attach a check to it. Or you could just hit the donate button on the show notes page or on DH Unplugged and provide us some money to keep this thing going, keep the lights on, make sure that we have enough of
T-shirts.
Yeah, T-shirts. That's right. They go quick. Let's see. This is on the donate. Let's see here. We have the close to the pin going on for Caterpillar. You have about three more days to get your price in to guess where Caterpillar will close on the 2nd of March. You have one day, sir. You need to get me your price.
I will get your price.
Caterpillar on 3-2.
ASAP.
And, of course, the winner of that will not only get a T-shirt, not only get a really nice certificate signed by myself and John, but will also get an entry into the end-of-year competition where there's all sorts of things you can win. Lots of fun. I also put a link there. If you go, there's a really cool place. There's a really cool place you can go check out charts and do all sorts of drawings or just see what's going on and track things over on TradingView. So click on that link there and check that out. They have some cool stuff there. All right, moving along. Barron's cover page, cover story this week. GE, you know, they got to be funny, of course, and have headlines. You know, GE's dim prospects.
Oh, yeah. This is the thing we talked about on our last No Agenda show. Yeah. These puns.
GE's dim prospects. Did the light go out at GE?
As if that GE even makes light bulbs anymore, do they?
You think so? I don't think they make the incandescents, but they probably make some LEDs.
I don't know.
Maybe they sold it off. But I think one of the problems were they had some of those commercials that they had people. There was one particular commercial that they were showing somebody like a turbine and a kid was asking questions. They made the kid look like a total idiot. Have you ever seen that one?
No, I didn't. I'd love to see it.
And I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, oh, I feel bad for that kid. You know, this made him look
at least
like
they didn't pick him up and throw him in the turbine.
Yeah, that would be bad. But the question is, GE's dim prospects, potential for another 10% down. I know you could probably keep saying this, but is this finally the final cover story contrarian indicator that people are looking for? GE's now
General happens. Electric getting slammed?
No, but usually you see kind of these things come out when it's done and over. Not that they couldn't, you know, why couldn't they come out of this one? GE's at 20.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the international rectifier story.
Oh, yeah, that's it. That'd be bad. That's the one, right?
It's a callback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just wonder if I'm not investing in it until this thing maybe gets to 12 and a half, if it ever does. If not, I'm just leaving it alone. It's at like 14 and three quarters right now, 14 and a half. Something I want to ask you about and pick your brain about is 5G. Is this all that it's cracked up to be? Is this happening? Is it coming?
You know, they're talking a lot about it, but there's nobody with 5G gear.
But that's because there's no 5G transmission yet. But once that happens, don't you think everybody's going to get on board?
I don't know. I mean, you're going to have to buy a whole new phone. You have to get a new radio.
Yeah.
Will they? Why would they do that? Why would they get on board any more than they're on board already?
Because they get 40 times faster speed than current generation. Maybe you can actually hear somebody on your phone.
If you get a Galaxy, not a Galaxy, but a Samsung S8, I think is the model, the new one.
Mm-hmm.
There's never been anything clearer that I've ever had any experience with in my entire life. Even during the days of analog digital phone, this is the clearest I've ever heard from a cell phone. It's astonishing.
Well, the hope is that this 5G is going to be a 100 times faster devices, higher capacity, greater software options for upgrades, lower battery consumptions, speeds up to 10 gigabits, ubiquitous, I can use that word, ubiquitous connectivity, virtually no latency, higher capacity that provides better sound, better video, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, that's what I heard too.
And then you don't need, if this does come.
Then you don't need what?
You don't need regular internet now. Now you have just internet everywhere.
Yeah, well, you definitely wouldn't need regular internet if they could service the whole country with this stuff, but I don't believe a word of it.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of talk about this.
I think there's going to be, it's going to be expensive. It's not going to be, the coverage is going to be mediocre, at least for a couple of years. It probably won't even work as fast as they say. There may be some sort of buggy aspect to it. We don't know. It's just like a lot of talk. And the other, the kind of the giveaway for me, even though this is counterintuitive and it's probably something I shouldn't say, but the fact that Intel is so invested in it really makes me feel funny. Intel is the same, you know, this is the group. They do stuff very well. But when it comes to stuff like this, like anyone remember WiMAX?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't remember what it did, but I do remember the name.
Yeah, well.
I guess that's the point.
When Intel is heavy into something like this, this is never a good thing.
Well, maybe what you want to do, and I looked at several different companies that Intel was on the list and a few others, but maybe what you want to do is look at the picks and shovels of this, like the tower companies, right? American Tower.
Mm, yeah, that's a thought.
You know, those could
they
be the
definitely
one.
Will be putting stuff up.
Yeah. So maybe, you know, whatever it is, you can't go wrong, because if they don't keep what they're doing, that could be good. And if they get maybe the 5G and they have to run that, you know, they're going to have to put it at the tower. It's not going to be underground, obviously. So they'll have to run something and string something or put something up somewhere.
Yeah, something's going up.
Yep. Moving along quickly, tariffs being considered for steel and aluminum. Aluminum.
I'm sorry, what?
Tariffs. Import tariffs.
On steel, aluminum?
Steel and aluminum, I believe it is, yes.
Mm. Oh, so that is that the reason that U.S. Steel went up?
That's it. Right when he announced that, yes, he's considering this and he'd like to do this, steel went up. And take a look at that chart. When I say up, it went up.
Yeah, skyrocketed.
There was some discussion about this potential. And that's, I stayed away from the short on this that I was going to put on due to the fact that I thought, you know what? From what I can see of what he does, and it's all about, you know, the things he knows, that the probability is very high that he will at least talk about putting a tariff on this.
The problem it could go up higher.
Yeah, and so it went from, what, 39 to 46 in 2 weeks. And that's during the time when the markets were kind of ugly, too. Didn't flinch. It came back a little bit today. I think it closed at maybe about 40, 45 or so. Came back a little bit today. But yeah, we're seeing that the potential for tariffs. Now, I think that the more we do with this, building walls, tariffs, you know, lowering the taxes here, it's starting to get a little bit too fast for me in terms of the potential for the idea that other countries are going to start getting pissed off. Just my opinion.
You might be right.
You know about this Florida shooting, of course.
Yeah.
Now, that was, just to let you know, that's probably about 15 miles due west of me.
Oh.
And as a matter of fact,
you know that little town?
Yeah.
It's a little Stepford Wives town, it seems like.
Well, I lived in the first Stepford for Wives town. That was Weston for 25 years. That was the best
school. Weston?
Weston. It was the best schools. It was the best all that, right? Yeah. And a lot of – it became very – let's just say heavy Latin influence over the years. And a lot of people decided not to live there that were not Latin and moved to Parkland.
So Parkland was the where white flight.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So this terrible thing happened, and, you know, my daughter actually knew one of the teachers that was, killed, and, somebody else too. And, so I was wondering what you thought about this. It seems to me, and maybe it's just, I don't know if it's maybe because where my proximity to it, does it seem like this is going to be the Me Too movement concept, not the actual Me Too, but the concept of a movement for gun control when all of a sudden something happens finally and there's going to be something going on here, or is this just going to subside?
I think it's going to subside like everything else.
Yeah.
Might not subside in Florida. I mean, Florida maybe have some action, but I think it's going to subside the rest of the country.
I mean, already we're seeing that kids walked out of school today and they walked from Boca down to Parkland in a protest.
They're supposed to walk out in March. I think it's on the 13th or something. 14th.
On March 14th, they're going up to D.C. And there's going to be a 17-minute national walkout. And then I think they're going to D.C. in March. And then today, a bunch of kids on buses went up to Tallahassee. Tallahassee already, there was a today there was a revival of assault weapon ban law in the Florida legislature.
Yeah.
And they knocked it down. Mm. And then President Trump today came out with and said that he's signing a memo to order Justice Department to ban bump stock devices for guns. And then we saw this terrible headline that the state pension.
The funny thing, I don't interrupt, but the funny thing about bump stocks.
Yeah.
Is that before Vegas, I never heard of bump stocks.
Never heard of it either. Yep.
And now all of a sudden they got to ban them. Okay.
Well, you're not a gun guy.
Well, I can shoot.
Right, but you don't have assault weapons with the desire to have semi-automatic into an automatic. Whatever happens with those bump stock deals. But here's the oops headline of the day. It seems that the state pension of Florida teachers holds 41,129 shares of America Outdoor Brands, which is valued about $500,000. That's the company that makes the AR-15.
Hmm.
And they also own they also own one or two other gun and gun related companies. And let me just say this before we get to the stocks today. This has got to be the worst planning, the triple P, piss poor planning. I call it the Great Chicken Outage. I don't know if you looked at what happened in England, in London in particular. Fast food chain Kentucky Fried Chicken said Monday it had been forced to close hundreds of British stores because of a shortage of chicken.
Shortage of chicken?
Shortage of chicken.
How does that work?
Well, this is what happened. It seems that they switched delivery contracts to DHL. At least they said this is what they're blaming it on. When I guess about 900 outlets had it shut down in Britain because what they said was that when this new delivery partner came on board, they had problems. They couldn't get it together and figure out how to get them across the country because this delivery process is very complex. So
why did they switch to him in the first place?
Well, why did they switch to him? But why did they not have some planning that went on? Just I don't understand why DHL, which is it's not a small company. It's a major.
No, huge international operation.
And all of a sudden they switch and we're talking about 900 outlets. This doesn't seem like a big deal to me. I mean, it obviously was, but.
Well, you got to give them a lot of chicken.
And why do you close? But why do you have to close 900? I mean, maybe 50?
I guess they ran out of chicken completely. They couldn't even deliver one chicken.
Yeah. Couldn't deliver the chickens. The Great Chicken Outage of 2018.
Huh.
Terrible. I got a few other things, but I'm going to just close on this. A Russian curler and medalist winner in the Winter Games in the Olympic Athletes of Russia team has failed a preliminary doping test.
For meldonium?
But that meldonium is supposedly...
What kind of a doping test do you need for curling? This is like finding someone who's a world-class expert in checkers failing a doping test.
Yeah.
It's pretty much on the same league.
Yeah, but seemingly, this is a heart disease medication. I guess it also gives you more stamina. And so the urine samples was specifically higher.
You could sweep faster.
Maybe you could sweep faster. Maybe you could, what do they yell? Hard! Hard! Maybe he needs that energy to scream. But he has failed the doping test, a curler. That puts a real damper on the whole sport.
Wow.
I mean, if you got to cheat at curling, for God's sakes.
It's not cheating. He's just taking his heart medication.
Probably. Anyway, a few other things going on here. We're going to give a hat tip to Jimbo, by the way, for giving me that tip on Amazon offering the 5% cash back on all purchases from Whole Foods. We have a few things we'll leave to the next show. But in the meantime, what is John T. Dvorak writing for PC Magazine?
Well, I'm revisiting the predicted Surface Phone. Because Microsoft has decided they're pulling the plug on any Windows phone, anything. They're not going to let it find itself anymore. They're pulling all support. It makes it sound like they're abandoning the phone completely, and they don't want anyone to even discuss it with comments like, the phone's dead, move on.
So this is something you thought they were going to do. You in a previous article, didn't you say they were doing this?
Well, I did. What they've done is a little more extreme than anything I predicted. But to me, it just confirms that they're going to come out with a Surface Phone.
Oh, you're saying? Oh, they want it quiet in order to not bring up the hype so there's any disappointment and then have a big surprise factor.
I'm thinking that's one of the elements. The other one is they don't want a bunch of people out there with Windows phones carping about how come you can't upgrade my phone? And bitching about the fact that I think the Surface Phone, in my latest thoughts, I could drag this on forever, is going to be is an Android phone.
The Windows Surface Phone is going to be an Android phone.
Yeah.
With what? A Windows Surface wrapper UI?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You nailed it.
That's kind of like what you do now with an Android phone, make it look like an Apple phone.
Yes, you can do all kinds of stuff with the Android. The front end can be changed to all sorts of things. In fact, the only pure Android phone out there is the Google phone. Samsung's phone is a pure Android phone. It's got all kinds of little fancy things added to it. So that's what Microsoft's going to do. That's what one of the things they used to do best. It used to be called Embrace and Extend.
Because, yeah, if you remember correctly, they had that square, ugly phone thing that they had a whole Microsoft Zune. Zune music service that failed
music
miserably.
Player, yeah.
But they also had the music service, like the iTunes store, that failed miserably.
Yeah.
They pulled that. And that'd be kind of interesting. Yeah. All right, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
All this can be found on dhunplugged.com, of course. Make sure to tweet this, send this, and send some love to your friends with the idea that they could listen each and every week to this. And of course, you can hear Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak. By the way, the C stands for Curry. They're related. It's John Curry Dvorak. That's what that's all about. And Adam Curry each and every week on Thursdays at 12 and on Sundays at 12. Hella high water. Deconstructing all the news and all the things that are out there to listen to. And of course, The Disciplined Investor is also a podcast you can listen to. We're going to play the game where we look at various stocks, and it's a game we play not on recommendation to buy or sell any security. I have to tell you something. I got the most frightening call today.
Yeah.
At 8 o'clock or 8:15 this morning. Yeah. Out of the blue, I get a call from a woman. Let me grab my notes because I wrote this down. She says to me, "Hi." She says, "I need some help." This is absolutely, by the way, this is a true story. 8 o'clock this morning or so. She says, I need your help. I was recommended to you. I'm like, oh, okay. She says, I trade futures and my account went from 300,000 down to 40. I'm like, oh, okay. She says, people said that you could help me with this. All my family members are looking at me like I've lost all their money. I'm on pills. I'm on antidepressants. I can't sleep. Then she started telling me other things about her relatives that shot themselves to death and all this other stuff. And she says, "Can you help me?" And I said, "I said I don't think so." I said, "You know, it's only." I tried to, you know, I had a counselor. I'm like, "It's only money. It's I don't know what. How about that?" She bought all these futures on the NASDAQ and the S&P 500, and she held them before the market got
decimated.
Yeah. And then she shorted into that at the lows.
Oh, geez. Well, no wonder she's got no money left. How can you help her?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so sitting on my desk and I have this horrible feeling about it. I'm just saying. Point is that
you can do it. It's a reason you don't. That's why most people should not be involved in investments.
Yeah, futures in particular. That just dovetails into the fact that this is a game that we play. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell any security.
Thanks for the dovetail.
That was the point there. Of course, this is just simply some ideas that we come up with each and every week. We list them here and on DH Unplugged. You can see the weekly stock picks and what's on, what's off, how much they're made, how much they lost. We usually have a 10% trailing stop on it. John C. Dvorak, myself, and Horowitz and Company clients may own any of the securities that are mentioned. So there you go. I have nothing this week.
Well, you have nothing in terms of the gains either.
Yeah, well, that's true. Oh, ba-dum-bum. Yep.
Yeah, there you go.
Uh-huh.
I was looking at this, and there we have, it's kind of, you know, we have some good gains, and then there's a bunch of just dead money, except for the apparently Credit Suisse, which got shoved out of the picture.
Right.
Which was shorting for some reason. It didn't work out. I have one, uh-huh, which I will put on. RARX. RARX, which is a pharmaceutical company. They may have something going on because two different people in the company have bought in to millions of dollars worth of shares. It's a $7 stock. Just bouncing off its all-time low of about $5.50, I believe. And it's just taking a little up move. If you look at the chart, you're going to see a frightening chart, a company you'd never want to be involved with. It went from $25 to $5.
Wow. Now it's back at pretty 7.5.
In a fairly short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in 6 months.
Wow.
Or actually in 7 months. But I don't know. The insiders are buying it. It's in biotech. It's
seems up 13% today.
Yeah.
So it's at $7.74 today.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What kind of stock?
And maybe 15%? On its way back up.
15%?
No, give me a 10%. I'm not going to. This thing just doesn't go straight up. I don't care.
Okay. All right. All right. We got it. I think it's all good.
All right. We'll talk again on the next show.
It'll be my pleasure.
Which will be Tuesday.
Yes, indeed. All right. See you then.
I'll get you the picks and some other stuff in the mail. Okay.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.